Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Oh, hey, before we start the show, I got to tell you about the Allegedly podcast with my lawyers, Bo Bowen and Ryan Schmidt. They got pop culture, they got legal news, they got behind the scenes antics and a whole lot of laughs. One of the best podcasts I've ever heard. Allegedly with Bo and Ryan at thebowenlawgroup.com. Link in the description and everywhere you get your podcasts, of course. And now let the cartoons begin.
The Bob Seska Show.
Bob Seska.
Hi, this is Adam West. I hope that you're having a really great Christmas season, and I wish you all a happy new year.
The Bob Seska Show.
Thanks, Batman. From our nation's capital, it is Tuesday, November 29, 2022. This is the Bob Seska Show on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. Hi, I'm Bob.
Hello, Bob.
Hi, day 679 of the Biden-Harris administration. 707 days until the 24th presidential election. And about a week until the Georgia runoff. Find me on Instagram, TheBobSeska, Twitter, BobSeska_go, and our Patreon is BobSeskaShow.com. My link tree is in the description. Plus, you can follow Buzz Burbank at Michael J. Elston on Twitter. Link in the description for that, too. And oh, look, he's sitting right over there.
You say Buzz Burbank.
I didn't say more.
You said it all.
Hi.
I said less. I want to see less Jimmy Fallon.
Ha,
Hi, everybody. He's Bob, I'm Buzz, and we taught the Rockettes how to high kick. Little known fact. It is the season, and you can tell it's getting colder.
I know.
Student loan relief's frozen over again. Yeah, the holiday season has begun, and that's a wonderful thing. Mm-hmm. But here's how cynical our society has become. 4 out of 5 kids no longer believe in the Supreme Court. It's just... Remember when we were kids?
I remember, yeah.
But the Supreme Court did rule that Congress can look at Donald Trump's tax returns.
Yay.
So we'll finally find out if Trump claims a dependent named Vladimir.
Answer is yes.
So, and this is the big one. Trump had dinner at Mar-a-Lago with the anti-Semitic Kanye West and the white supremacist Nick Fuentes.
Yes.
Interesting menu, kind of a Thanksgiving dinner, but with only white meat. And Lindsey Graham has finally testified to a Georgia grand jury that's investigating election interference. Mm-hmm. Lindsey changed his mind about not testifying after he heard how Herschel Walker pronounced election.
Erection day, yeah.
Yeah, he said it. And Republicans say the first thing they'll do after taking over the House majority is read the Constitution. They say it's one of the many suspicious documents on Hunter Biden's laptop.
More music, the Bob Seska Show.
All right, kicking off a brand new week with the inimitable Rocky Mountain Mike. Here we go.
He long runs his Twitter like a clown. He thinks that he is Jesus.
A little bit.
Because he likes his fame.
I guess.
And he let in every Nazi here in town.
Great song.
Elon wants my money. he lost a lot, they say. Spends his days making cars that blow up on the motorway.
Oh, that's it. Okay. All right. Thank you. I thought the song was just about ready to kick in right there, but yeah.
Lovely. Lovely. No, nicely done.
Rocky MNTN Mike on Twitter. Follow him now. Okay. Well, we're going to get into Elon Musk and the latest from his destruction of Twitter here in just a second.
Boy.
So I noticed on Twitter the White House posted pictures of the decorations this year, the holiday decorations, Christmas decorations all over the White House, which always blows me away. I love seeing the White House decorated for Christmas.
Yes.
Except those four times.
Death Christmas, yeah.
I know. But how nice is it to finally have normal White House holiday decorations that don't look like Vecna's lair in Stranger Things? I mean, that was Melania Trump's decoration. You know, the fucking decorations. Just looking like a nightmare for 4 years.
Right.
Yeah, just those weird red stalagmites that she created.
She was the Tim Burton of first ladies, I think.
Yeah, but finally the White House is back to normal, and I love to see it. I think we had normal decorations last year, too.
I'm sad that normalcy, because I know we all appreciate that normalcy. I'm sad that it gets overshadowed by the continuing crap.
Yeah, you know, I know.
The ugly things that get more attention and tend to obscure niceness and normalcy of this White House.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And you know what? We've got our Christmas songs and Christmas jingles rolled out. Well, just a little bit. We're sticking one toe in, as you heard. Adam West saying hi to us all and wishing us all a Merry Christmas there at the top of the show.
Nice.
And plus, we're going to be playing Christmas songs from all of our indie bands here between now and Christmas
wonderful.
Break. So, yeah.
Cool. I'm ready. We have our decorations up. It's kind of unusually early for us, but I don't know. After Thanksgiving, I was ready to dive in and, you know, had the ability to do so. And we saw a great Christmas movie, and I'm sure other people have seen it too, but many, I'm sure, have not, and they should. It's and you know, it wasn't something I was sure that I would like, but it's incredible. It's with the Will Ferrell, Ryan Reynolds movie, the musical that's out now, Spirited, and it's on Apple TV Plus. Oh my God, that's good. I'm eager to see it again. I think it's going to be a new Christmas classic. I think you can add it to your library along with A Christmas Story and, you know, It's a Wonderful Life and all the others that may be on your shelf. This is a really, really entertaining and good movie.
I had no idea that even existed, so I'm going to have to go and check that out now. That sounds really great.
Well, you know, and I never used to be big on musicals. I think I am more so now, but this is a musical even for people who don't like musicals. And you think, can Will Ferrell sing? Oh, my God, he can sing.
He sings like an angel.
He does. He does. He does probably 60% of the singing in this movie. But he's wonderful in this. I didn't used to even like Will Ferrell when he first appeared on Saturday Night Live. But the things that he's done since, dramatically and otherwise, and now musically as well, have blown me away. So I just wanted to make a top recommendation for Spirited on Apple TV Plus.
Plus, you know what? If you haven't bought your Christmas tree yet for this year, you might want to listen to the Shadow Docket coming up on our Patreon page at BobSeskaShow.com. Sign up for $5 a month to get the Shadow Docket, which we do on Tuesdays and Thursdays. It's act three of the show, basically. And I've got my helpful Christmas hack for buying a Christmas tree. Just a little bit of advice, because I think a big Christmas tree is suckering a lot of people into buying pre-lit trees. And so I want to talk about that. We're going to get into that during the Shadow Docket. I'll provide a community service, I think. That's what I'm going to refer to it as.
I'm eager to hear that.
Yeah, which is inevitably going to stir up controversy. Because when I tweeted this, it was just like I was bombarded with people saying, no, you're doing it wrong. No. Mm-hmm. But I've got it all figured out, Buzz. I do.
It may be an interesting. Well, I'll be here to hear that, because I have a pre-lit tree.
I've got a tip for you when it's time to buy a new one. And I get I don't want to spoil it.
We don't want to get into it yet.
Yeah, having the gift of gab, I want to start going, bleh, but I'm going to keep my mouth shut until the Shadow Docket. All right. I think I can do it. So, on a completely separate note, Trump always makes things worse for Trump. That is my ongoing rule. And the latest instance of that is, hey, wouldn't it be great to announce the 2024 campaign and then immediately have Kanye West and Nick Fuentes over for dinner?
And also immediately after the latest killing at Club Q.
That's right. That's right.
You know, this is the atmosphere in which this takes place. This didn't happen in a vacuum. Actual violence is being perpetrated against the LGBTQ plus community.
Yeah.
And it saddens me and infuriates me. And to see this dinner and the trend that I think it paints for the nation really gets to me.
Donald Trump is a paranoid man. Would you say that? I think that's a fairly easy call to make. Yeah, Donald Trump, deeply, deeply paranoid, always looking over his shoulder. He's made so many enemies that I'm 1,000% positive that Donald Trump does his advance work, either himself or he's got Stephen Miller or some other underling, Cash Patel or whoever, doing advance work where they research every last person who is going to be in the vicinity of Donald Trump. This is just something that normal politicians do, but then you push that through the prism of Donald Trump's paranoia. Everyone's out to get him. Right. Of course he knew who Nick Fuentes was before Nick Fuentes showed up for cranberry sauce and the waffle bar at Mar-a-Lago.
He had to.
Yeah, absolutely. And in case you're just joining us now and you don't know, Nick Fuentes isn't just any normal red hat. He gleefully, proudly, vocally, unapologetically wishes to subjugate Jews, LGBTQ people, people of color, all non-whites, and he does it with this gigantic shit-eating grin on his face. Trump knew this, and yet he enjoyed a big, beautiful chocolate cake with his goblin anyway, right?
Right, and Fuentes has a purpose here that I don't know if Trump is smart enough to see. It's the access to power that Fuentes seeks, and he doesn't, I don't think, care who the leader is. Fuentes wants Trump back in the White House, and he wants him there to stay. Nick Fuentes has said to his right-wing audience that he wants Trump back in the White House, and he wants Trump to never leave voluntarily. Mm-hmm. He wants fascism.
Yeah.
It's fascism. We're teetering on the edge, and I guess I've not listened to her series yet, but I know enough about Rachel Maddow's Ultra to know that we're headed for Nazism here.
Yeah.
I mean, again, we're not exaggerating. We're not being overly dramatic. Every sign points to the fact that this nation is headed for a Nazi-style fascism, and people are going to suffer and die because of it. We've got to stop this. It's depressing. I'm seeing my nation crumble before my eyes, just as I'm seeing Twitter crumble before my eyes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And with this marriage between Donald Trump and Nick Fuentes, Donald Trump is one of those people who knows where his bread is buttered. He knows where his votes are coming from and where they will come from. I've been hearing all kinds of excuses from other Republicans, like David Friedman, who was Trump's ambassador to Israel, said to my friend Donald Trump, this is on Twitter, to my friend Donald Trump, you are better than this. Even a social visit from an anti-Semite like Kanye West and human scum like Nick Fuentes is unacceptable. Yeah. I urge you to throw those bums out, disavow them, and relegate them to the dustbin of history where they belong. Well, you know what? He's no different or better than those guys. He's exactly at the same level as Kanye West and Nick Fuentes. Donald Trump has just recently tweeted about Letitia James, referring to her as peekaboo. Now, what does peekaboo mean? You replace the syllable peek with the syllable jig, and there it is. There's the racism from Donald Trump. Actually, David Friedman might be correct. They may be on different levels, and the only reason they're on different levels is because Donald Trump doesn't have the balls to say the N-word out loud like Nick Fuentes does.
But it tickles him to hint at it.
Yes.
He as close as he can come to giggling, that's how much it delights Donald Trump to spout a word like that.
Yeah.
And I don't disagree that Trump shares the ideology to a large extent, but I don't want to give Trump too much credit for depth. I think... I think it's as simple as, and he actually, Trump actually said this of Fuentes, he said some very nice things about me. He was very nice to me. That's what Donald Trump cares about.
Yeah, yeah. He also said,
To Fuentes, I just want to add, to Fuentes, that makes Trump a tool to access the power that Fuentes wants to require women to marry young and have babies and to wear veils. He actually said that. And to ban abortions and to ban sodomy, to go after homosexuals. All Fuentes wants from Trump is the access to power. All Trump wants from Fuentes is he said nice things about me.
Nick Fuentes wants it to be legal to kill women. I mean, this is the kind of shit. He's not hinting at this. He's not using. He's not disguising his language or anyway. There's nothing ambiguous about this. Some people would say, "Hey, stop calling the Republicans fascists." Well, you know what? Nick Fuentes says everything, the N-word, the F-word, talking about murdering women and how that should be legal. He doesn't like democracy. He thinks this should be a dictatorship, and the dictator should force everyone to believe what Nick Fuentes believes. That's who went to dinner with Donald Trump Thursday night.
We're not just saying this. He has said that. He has really said that. Bob and I need people to know, and our listeners need people to know, and will hopefully continue to spread the word, that this guy is saying these things, and he means these things, and he's accessed Donald Trump, which he sees as a key to gaining power, to get that white supremacist government, fascist government that Fuentes dreams of. This is not an exaggeration on our part. We're not falsely pulling a fire alarm here. This is very, very real, and this is one of many indicators. But I want to say about the Republicans you mentioned, their silence is complicity.
Yeah.
The fact that not really, Pence came out with some weak-ass statement. A couple others have come out with weak-ass statements. Mm-hmm. But nobody, even Ronna McDaniel at the RNC, has said, no, we don't do that. But she never called out Trump. She never condemned Trump for what he did. Let us underscore the fact, and let us all remind everyone, that the leading presidential contender for the Republicans in 2024 just had dinner with a white supremacist and an anti-Semite, and is proud of that fact, has no regrets.
Yeah.
And no Republican has condemned that. No Republican. And in their silence, they're agreeing with him. Mm-hmm. That is the Republican Party. They are fascist. We're not exaggerating. We're not name-calling. We're not waving our arms wildly, except to warn you that this is real.
Yes. Trump said on Truth Central.
Truth Central.
The other day, they, referring to Fuentes and Kanye West, they expressed no anti-Semitism during dinner, which is kind of like saying he had dinner with KKK guys, but they didn't lynch anyone before dessert. So it makes it okay. Right.
Bullshit.
And Trump will ultimately never renounce these guys. No, he may pretend, he may throw out some cursory things, almost like he did on January 6th, where after it was too late, we want no violence. We like our law enforcement, blah, blah, blah. He was saying, but it was already too late for that. It's already too late for this. He already met with these people and we know who they are.
I was just going to say that neo-Nazi dinner occurred 1 week ago tonight.
Yeah.
It's been a week. And what have you heard from Republicans condemning that? Little to nothing.
And they won't. They know where their bread is buttered. They know they need those votes. No one knows better than Donald Trump that he needs every single one of the white supremacist, racist, misogynist, homophobic votes, transphobic votes. Those are all votes that he's welcome to have, and he will do and say whatever he needs to do in order to retain those votes, because he can't win without them. That's why he's never going to renounce his most vile followers. He needs them to win.
Right.
And we know Donald Trump. He's so narcissistic. He's so up his own ass that it's one of those things where if someone expresses, something favorable, something positive about Donald Trump, they're immediately his best friend because they're useful to him. And that's entirely why. So the other thing I wanted to add on this topic is Donald Trump talking about how the top secret documents he kept at Mar-a-Lago were completely safe and secure there. No, don't worry. We kept them in a secure facility at Mar-a-Lago. You know, we bought a $5 padlock from Home Depot and slapped it on the door. Didn't lock it. You know, there were some things in my office that's at ground level with doors that lead out to the swimming pool and the prime rib bar and whatever the hell they have at Mar-a-Lago. Totally secure, though. But he has no idea who these people are walking around his place and joining him for dinner. I have no idea. Who's this guy? Nick what? How do you pronounce that last name?
And, I don't remember who pointed it out, but you know, because he's an ex-president, the Secret Service was present.
Yeah, right.
You know, so you have Trump may still have, probably still has items that belong to the American people that he stole from the White House.
Yeah.
He may have them at Mar-a-Lago. They may be in New York. They may be in New Jersey. They may be in Illinois, where they could be, or Virginia. They could be all over the place. And yet he has these people in, and the Secret Service is there. And, you know, and I'm reminded, too, of the tunnel connected to that basement where the documents are stored. Also in that basement is a door to a tunnel that leads under the road across the street to the Giuliani bungalow.
Despicable.
Is that what it's called now, the Giuliani bungalow?
That's what I call it. It's where Mr. and Mrs. Giuliani, and for a while just Mr. Giuliani, stayed. Very secure, very secure. And so, yeah, if you're going to have secure materials, you want to be sure and have a white supremacist who wants to overthrow democracy to your dinner table.
So now, after the Trump meeting, Nick Fuentes is going around the country with Kanye West, and joining them is Milo Yiannopoulos. He's back from the dead somehow. Yeah. And then podcaster Tim Pool. It's like shit rolling downhill, accumulating more shit as it rolls. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what's happening here. And the question I have, from a strategic point of view, the awfulness of these people aside and the toxicity that they represent, this poison, this cancer on our democracy, with Donald Trump being the main tumor in all of it. The strategic question that I have is, yeah, we got to vocally oppose these people and call them out for who they are. At the same time, what's going to be interesting about this is to see how many independent voters run screaming from the Republican Party. The more people like Nick Fuentes and Kanye West become close to people like Donald Trump and the Republican Party. I mean, Donald Trump being the sort of de facto leader of the party, Ronna McDaniel aside, Donald Trump still kind of calls the shots, even after what happened last week. So this should be interesting to watch. I mean, it may actually serve to put the final nail in the coffin. And I kind of slap myself in the face. And the reason I do that is, I've said this before. I said this after Charlottesville. I said it after Helsinki. I said it after January 6th. This is going to be it. The Republican Party is screwed. But I think maybe this is going to be one of those things, because it seems like the electoral trajectory is moving away from the Republican Party for this exact reason. The Republican Party's embrace of extremism.
So.
Yeah.
I would like to think that the long lines that we're seeing in Georgia are favorable and will elect Warnock. And I think they're largely motivated by what we see going on around us, by this very thing. Harken back to the primaries for this year, if we can, for a moment.
Sure.
There are people who still question the strategy, but it appears to have worked. And that's where Democrats poured money into the most extreme right-wing Republican campaigns because they wanted these nut jobs to be their opponents. They thought, well, let's make the nut job the nominee of the other party, and then we can easily beat their ass. And you know what? It was a risky gambit, but it worked.
Yes, it did.
And it might not have. It could have just as easily failed, but it just so happens that it worked. Mm-hmm. And now we're seeing a similar logic applied to, I don't know if you've heard, Mike Lindell, the pillow guy, wants to challenge Ronna McDaniel as head of the RNC. Mike Lindell wants to run the RNC, take it over from Ronna McDaniel.
Yes.
And a lot of Democrats are going, oh, God, yes, please. Let the nuttiest guy in the room run that place. Likewise, many Democrats hope that Trump will be the Republican nominee for president in 24 because of all this insanity. And the way voters are rising up, as we see now in Georgia and as we've seen in the recent elections, we weren't supposed to win the Senate in this election, but we did. And I think we're going to end up with 51+1 there. The House we lost, but not by much. And we shouldn't have even come this close when you calculate the odds and look at history. Yeah. So we've done a remarkable thing here. And I think a lot of it is the hatred that we're seeing toward LGBTQ, because people have friends and family and relatives who are part of that community, mm-hmm. and therefore consider themselves part of that community. I am included in that group, I think.
Yeah.
And it hurts me. It kills me to see members of these communities, of LGBTQ plus communities, who pay taxes, who raise wonderful children, mm-hmm. who are stay out of trouble with the law, who make their house payments. They are good citizens. They are the kind of people you would want as your next-door neighbors, and yet they're being not only vilified, but attacked and killed.
Yep.
And now, whereas it was an incident here and an incident there, now we're again seeing mass killings, whether it's the nightclub in Orlando or Club Q just these past few weeks.
Mm-hmm. And the very practice, as they are doing, of removing or fighting back against using either violence or legislation or both against gender-affirming mm-hmm. care mm-hmm. is going mm-hmm. to kill more people. They may not even have to firebomb a hospital. They may not have to shoot more people at LGBTQ nightclubs. All they need to do to kill LGBTQ people when they're still teenagers, when they're still young,
is to deny
that gender-affirming care.
And many of them will take their own lives as a result of that.
Exactly right.
What happens.
Yep. So that's part of it. An NPR analysis of the landscape right now found that over the past 2 years, State lawmakers introduced at least 306 bills targeting trans people.
That's trans alone.
Yeah.
Over 350 bills introduced against various segments of that community.
A majority of that legislation, 86%, focuses on trans youth. This is going to exacerbate the epidemic of suicide among children. They've declared war on trans people. I mean, this is what it is. Because it's a two-front war. One is, as I was saying, acts of terror, domestic terrorism. And then on the other hand, making a climate in which a lot of trans youth will end up committing suicide.
Life could be tough enough for members of the LGBTQ plus community prior to this. Now, like you said, it's manifesting itself in violence and legislation. Mm-hmm. And so it's stepped up several levels from where it was. I was feeling, you know, and again, this is my naivete, my Pollyanna outlook that I think I've just about lost, and that is that I was of the belief, say 5-6 years ago, that a growing number of Americans, and I still believe this to a certain extent, a growing number of Americans were supportive of members of these communities.
Yeah.
And that made me proud. I saw a lot of straight people saying, I stand shoulder to shoulder. I believe I even said at one point, if you want to come after my LGBTQ plus friends, you have to come through me. And I think a lot of people sort of took that stand, and I was very encouraged. That raised my heart to see that trend. But now this hatred that's always been simmering out there is manifesting itself in violence and legislation. And it's time for all of us to stand up and say no, and to say it loudly. It's time. This has got, we are so, you know, and this, I never thought I'd be saying this. We are so close to Nazism now. Yeah. We are so close to fascism now. I never thought I'd see that in my lifetime, but it's true. It's not an exaggeration. It's real. That's my message this week.
Yeah. And on the plus side, though, I think what this past midterm has proved, and I think Michael Beschloss first put this out there on MSNBC, when it really comes down to saving the republic, oftentimes American voters step up to the plate and do the right thing. And I think that may have been the case this past time around.
And it's often at the last minute. I told Bob when we first started doing this show together, and I may have said it on the show a time or two, the American public, because they have they are individuals who have children to raise and jobs to attend to and household chores and household repairs, and they've got their own lives, and their lives in many cases, especially if they have a lot of family, their lives are quite full, and there isn't a lot of room for keeping track of things, and the result of that is the American public sort of runs behind the curve.
It
takes them a while to realize. Donald Trump comes along, for example. It could take the public, as we saw, years to get to the point where they say, enough.
Yeah.
And, you know, they it took them too damn long to get there, but they do get there.
I'll never forget the day after the 2004 presidential election. In addition to George W. Bush being reelected, which was devastating in and of itself, one of the other things that happened in that election was Karl Rove and the Republican Party ended up getting a whole bunch of ballot initiatives, and they were all intended to ban same-sex marriage in all of these different states. And the consequence of that is it drove turnout in the reddest areas of the country to support those ballot initiatives to make sure that gay people couldn't get married, et cetera.
It's a trick Democrats could use more often, by the way.
And yeah, absolutely. And by the way, it actually worked in 2004. Yes. It was so depressing. It was absolutely a low ebb in the fight for civil rights in this country. And that started to turn around, especially once we got to Obergefell and those kinds of decisions happening during the Obama years. Joe Biden in particular coming out in support of same-sex marriage, which was crucial at the time. And things began to open up. Now, what we have in this current period of time is this huge backlash to Obergefell and all the rest of it. And one of the reasons why there is this backlash, and I was tweeting about this a couple of days ago, I think, there are at least 883 cases of sexual assault, rape, child porn, child sexual assault, all the rest of it, among Republican politicians. This is from around 2015, 2016 until now. So in the past 7 years, 883 cases. This is one of the most underreported stories in the United States right now, that there is this epidemic of sexual assault among Republicans. And that's why I think they're making such a big deal over trans people and this whole nonsense about grooming and gender-affirming care. They want to say, hey, look over here, this thing over here, so you're not looking at us, and we're the ones who are committing all kinds of sexual assault in bathrooms and elsewhere, when in fact the number of transsexual assaults in bathrooms remains at zero.
Everyone who's gay, everyone who's trans, are now being labeled falsely, infuriatingly, as groomers. They aren't. Right. They are not. There are no cases, no statistics to uphold that. While we have 883 Republicans and who knows how many pastors and Boy Scout leaders and others in positions of power, but Republicans primarily, they're the ones who are doing the grooming. What the state trooper who groomed the girl in California and then killed her family and burned down their house.
Yep.
He's not gay or trans, but he was grooming this young lady. It's not the gays and it's not the trans people who are grooming. It doesn't happen. It's a freaking lie, and that lie infuriates me, especially, as you said, since it's really Republicans.
And I saw a clip of, bringing this back around to Nick Fuentes, I saw a clip of him the other day in which he was talking about how the fact that he's never had a girlfriend, Nick Fuentes.
Huh.
Shocker. That this guy is not a chick magnet. I can't believe it. Why women? Why are you turning your back on Nick Fuentes? He seems like such a nice guy. But he was saying that both straight sex and, of course, gay sex are both gay. He said the reason he's not in a relationship with a woman is because he believes that straight sex is actually kind of gay, and so is gay sex. And he said the only straight, fully straight way to be in this society is to be an incel.
Yeah.
But isn't the first part of that involuntary?
Involuntary, exactly, exactly. And I mean, listen to what this man is saying. Listen, I mean, he's insane.
Yeah, he is insane. And the crazy thing about it, the most frustrating thing about it, is he does it with that big grin on his face.
Yeah, and that you want to slap off of him.
He's not embarrassed at all. He just lets it all fly. I can't believe
it tickles him.
Yeah, yeah. There are still platforms on the internet that are willfully carrying his show. Same with Tim Pool and the others. This is something that's part of the problem. But as I said before, it may end up working ultimately to our benefit to see someone who is this explicit about their hatred and awfulness, using all the worst words and terminology and attitudes. This may actually drive independent voters, as I was saying before, over to Democrats and say, hey, you know what? I don't love everything you guys do, but at least you're grown-ups. Can we join forces? And I hope that ends up being the end game in all this.
Yeah, join me in this. Yeah, we must always associate Nick Fuentes with Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And because Republicans have stated no notable objection to this, we must always associate all Republican politicians with Nick Fuentes.
I noticed this morning a picture, someone posted a photograph of Kanye West and Nick Fuentes having dinner at this restaurant called Matsutake in a place called Frederick. I don't think it's Frederick, Maryland, but it's Frederick somewhere. Yeah. And the first thing I thought of is, if you're the kitchen staff at this restaurant, how much spit and butt sweat are you putting into Nick Fuentes' dinner?
It's a crime, but I might be looking for the drain cleaner at that
I mean, come on. Remember there's a scene in Mallrats where Jason Lee stink palms this guy, where he puts his hand between his butt cheeks and gets it all sweaty, and then shakes hands with this guy and gives him chocolate-covered pretzels?
Ew, David.
Holy shit, that's exactly what I would do. If I knew Nick Fuentes was in my restaurant, I would find a way to get a big back of the sinus passages loogie in the middle of his fried rice.
E. coli is one of the hazards of the food service industry. You know, it happens. Yeah. You know, it just happens. You do your best to avoid it, but occasionally it just happens.
I mean, I got to give him credit for being ballsy for going in restaurants at all. I mean, you would think immediately someone would say, oh, is that Nick Fuentes? That's the guy who just bandies around the N-word and the F-word and is proud of it. He has that shit-eating grin. If I saw that guy come into my restaurant, Oh my God, without even hesitating, that would be me. He deserves it, though. Kanye, too. Tim Pool, as well. Milo Yiannopoulos would get, the sole of my shoe rubbed all over his hamburger patty or something like that. Maybe. I dare to dream. Can I fantasize at least about poisoning these people?
A boy can dream. A boy can always dream. Always.
All right, lots more to come. We got to talk about Elon the Mad King here in just a second and his mission to screw up Twitter.
Mad King.
Yeah. But first, if you're pissed off at cable news and other serious, very serious political analysts these days, here's an outstanding way to support independent media, specifically this show. For just $5 a month, you can support our Patreon page as we guide you through the madness and chaos of our politics. But it's not just about supporting shows like this one. You're also going to get bonus content as a reward for your monthly support. We're talking about exclusive access to our Shadow Docket show, recorded after the end credits on our Tuesday and Thursday shows. You're also going to get access to the Patreon app, where you can download the free show and our bonus content. Plus, you can join the discussion with our community of Patreon members in the comments under each episode. All that for just $5 per month, pennies per show. So don't miss out. BobSeskaShow.com is the website address. Bookmark it. Go there right now. Sign up. Send it to all your friends. And we thank you in advance.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure, with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Bob Seska! All-time favorites all day long! So this is Christmas.
Yeah, this is my friend, the great Freak Bass. And Happy Christmas, War is Over by John Lennon. I love this.
I thought I detected some funk there. It's a funky Christmas song.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Freak Bass is the absolute best. FreakBass.com. Make sure to follow his live show on Twitch. Easy to find. Just search Freak Bass on Twitch. He just jams, man. He goes on and on and on just with the ongoing funk jams, and they're wonderful. And plus, he's a hell of a nice guy, too.
Always great.
Yeah, link in the description to support Freak Bass under this episode of BobSeska.com. Also, BobSeska.com/music to submit your work to the show. Yeah, we're playing Christmas songs by all of our independent recording artists here coming up, and some new ones, some classic ones that we've played before, and a whole lot more. So, yep, we're in it. We're in it through the end of the year. So, okay. Elon the Mad King continues to make things worse for himself. I mean, there's no other way to put it. Here's a guy who wants to build a fortune. He wants to recoup his $44 billion by building up his advertising base. And at the same time, he's scaring away all of his advertisers.
Chasing them off, yeah.
I
saw an ad today. This is how I knew it was over in a sad way. This is where I reached the point this morning. I reached the point that said Twitter has been desecrated and decimated.
Yeah.
I saw an ad from a little startup razor company. And they said, don't buy your blades from a company that's too woke to advertise on Twitter.
Oh, Jesus.
Immediate block. I've been very lucky. I've said this before. I don't know. I'm blessed somehow Twitter-wise in that up until now, I have seen little to no right-wing content on there. I don't know if it's just the way my feed has ended up and the people I've blocked, a combination of those things. I've seen more right-wing stuff on Facebook than I've seen in all my time on Twitter. But today I crossed that Rubicon. Today I saw, I saw the darkness that had bled into that platform, and especially after yesterday's story from the Washington Post that showed how followers of Democratic lawmakers had fallen off by the tens of thousands, and Twitter followers for Republican politicians and lawmakers had risen, with one exception, and that being our new House Speaker, Hakeem Jeffries. So.
Yes. In fact, I'm glad you brought that up, because that was something I kind of forecasted. Back on November 27th, I tweeted, scaring away normals is part of Elon's plan. It leaves Twitter to the bros, fascists, and weirdos, smothering pro-democracy messaging in time for 2024. And now, as you said, we've learned that Republicans have all gained followers since Elon's takeover, while the Democrats have lost followers. I'm talking about Republican and Democratic politicians, leaders in Congress, for example.
Lawmakers, tens of thousands of followers gone for them, tens of thousands added for Republican lawmakers.
Yeah, exactly. So Elizabeth Warren's followers have dropped off. Same with Bernie Sanders, Adam Schiff. Hakeem Jeffries may have gained a few, but that's only because he's now going to be the Democratic leader in the House.
Right.
So he had a little bit of attention there to kind of counterbalance all of the losses. Right. But Matt Gaetz, Rand Paul, Ted Cruz, Jim Jordan, all the worst people, Marjorie Taylor Greene, gained significantly more followers than the Democrats lost.
And make no mistake, ladies and gentlemen, this is the rise of fascism.
Exactly. You're not seeing Marjorie Taylor Greene, who, by the way, hosted Nick Fuentes at a, whatever it was, at an America First PAC meeting where they all spoke on the same dais and stood behind the same podium and shook hands and smiled and embraced each other. Yeah.
She loves to be photographed with Fuentes. She loves to be photographed with Trump. She loves to be photographed with Kyle Rittenhouse. Mm-hmm. She's all about that. And these numbers, the phenomena that we're seeing on Twitter now, this sadly, tragically, is the rise of fascism. It's the rise of Nazism.
Mm-hmm. And that's why we have to be extra diligent. We have to be extra aware of what's going on, and we need to activate, because the way fascism rises in this country is via democracy. That's the double-edged sword of democracy, where you can use democracy to end democracy, right?
Yeah, it's been done in many countries. Yes, yes. And it not only can happen here, it is happening here, mm-hmm. and it's up to us to stop it.
On average, Republicans gained 8,000 followers. Democrats lost 4,000 followers. That was part of a data analysis by ProPublica. I mean, it could entirely be that just Elon Musk is this ungainly weirdo who doesn't understand how to do shit with Twitter, and so he's just stepping on rakes the whole time. But there's, I think, a much more nefarious goal going on here, maybe through the people who helped finance his takeover. Peter Thiel, Saudi Arabia, all have financial stake in this group that has purchased Twitter, led by Elon Musk. And there may be a thing to drive away liberals, or to drive away normals in general, because we're also talking about moderate conservatives as well under this Democratic big tent. So the mission is to clear the way in time for 2024. Just look at which groups want Donald Trump back in the White House, or at the very least, a friendly Republican back in the White House.
Right.
And those groups are somehow even tangentially linked to this Elon Musk takeover of Twitter. Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a real thing. And I think that's why, you know, to a certain extent, we should all plant our flags in some of these new startups, these social media startups that are popping up. But at the same time, I think we do need to maintain a presence on Twitter so that we don't cede that. Because ultimately, if we all leave, it's not going to become Truth Central.
Truth Central.
It's not going to be that, because there are still going to be lots of regular people on Twitter absorbing all of this madness from the new political leadership on Twitter.
We need to compete for attention. Somebody put it this way. They said, don't cede the town square to those people.
Bingo.
Those people have entered the town square.
Yeah.
They're here. We don't like it. They're not going away anytime soon. But I, like I said before, I'm not going to let them run me off.
No, no.
I'm not happy. I'm very sad, in fact, by what I see on Twitter now. It's one of the things that is a target of my holiday depression. I will tell you, you're talking about Elon Musk. I had an alternative punchline to a joke today in the monologue. It was the one about only white meat was served at the meal.
Yes.
But that was the punchline I landed on. I'd written, so Trump sat down for dinner at Mar-a-Lago with the anti-Semitic Kanye West and the white supremacist Nick Fuentes, but there was an empty seat at the table due to a previous engagement. No Elon Musk.
I like the white meat one better, but that's still good.
Well, it's tough because you have to decide before. And before showtime, I was trying to decide, shall it be this one or this one? I think I made the right decision, but since we were talking about Musk, I thought he belonged at that table to a certain extent. I saw a political cartoon that showed the other seats at the table occupied by a burning cross, a Klansman, a pile of dung, Vladimir Putin.
Yeah.
It's the same idea. But Musk is now part of this neo-Nazi movement.
Well, there are two things you can do to clear out your mentions, because the floodgates are being opened. I'll get to that in a second. But just by way of advice for maintaining and cultivating your mentions is, the first tool, I think, is the hide reply block process, where if you go to your replies under a particular tweet that you've posted, and you click on the three dots in the upper right corner of that reply, of any of these, like say you find a Red Hat reply that's got an egg avatar and two followers, you hit that three-dot drop-down menu, and then you choose from that drop-down menu, hide reply. And then it gives you the option to block or not block that person.
Yeah, you keep clicking. You go back and click it again, and then you hit mute, and then you go back and click it again and hit block.
Yes, exactly right. That's the system. And the other thing that you can do is go to that person's profile, and from the menu on their profile, you can remove that follower from following you. They will not know that they're no longer following you, but you'll know. So one of the things that I like to do when it comes to trolls is, if it's really heinous, I'll do hide, reply, block. But secondary to that, what I'll do is I'll go and find if they're following me. And if they are, I will remove the follower from following me and then mute them. And they will have no idea. So they're going to be screaming into an empty void every time they try to reply to me, if they do at all, because they won't see my tweets come up in their feed anymore.
I try to vet the people that I follow, but I've changed my practice, and I know you don't do it this way, but I began to feel badly, especially as I saw the Twitter community falling apart.
Yeah,
I felt badly about the thousands of people who'd followed me, and I didn't bother to follow them back. I was very, 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 very discriminating and would only follow certain people.
Me
back.
Too. Yeah.
And I've changed that as I saw Twitter falling up apart. I try to vet everyone, but I've been following because first of all, I just think we all need to be connected.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to grow the number of people I'm following, which is only about a sixth or a fifth or whatever of the people who follow me. I had a change of heart and decided, no, I need to start following people. Not because they're important, but because they're one of us.
And in the past, I haven't been as liberal with blocking people, but now I do. You have to, because what that does is that'll affect the algorithm. That'll make it much less likely that those people will show up at the top of someone's mentions. It essentially demotes them as far as their visibility.
But that's for now.
I mean, obviously, these rules are going to change because of Elon Musk. Yeah.
And know that they're still out there. You just won't be seeing them.
Right, right. So Elon is going full Bane from The Dark Knight Rises, releasing all the prisoners from Blackgate Prison. He said, the people have spoken. He didn't want another one of these bogus Twitter polls, whether or not to release all the people who have been suspended or have their accounts removed over the years. And now he's going to release all those people back. He said, the people have spoken. Amnesty begins next week. Vox Populi, Vox Dei. And you know what, by the way, that Latin phrase, completely misappropriated. The phrase comes from something that was warning against making the voice of the people the voice of God. It's a warning against that notion. Of course, Elon Musk is too much of a feckless neophyte to be able to understand that. And by the way, he also added in a subsequent tweet, he added, Gotham is yours. None shall interfere. Do as you please. That was my Bane impression. But that's it. This is what he's doing. He's releasing all the thugs and criminals and rapists from Blackgate Prison. Or the Ghostbusters metaphor that he's opening up the grid, allowing all the ghosts to flow back into Manhattan.
This is the other thing that stabbed me in the heart today about Twitter, is to know that he's allowed Q back onto Twitter.
Yeah, yeah.
Q, you know, and the people who used to vet and keep them off the platform are gone. Mm-hmm. They aren't there anymore. Yep. And now it's official policy. Musk is allowing Q back onto Twitter. And the water gets dirtier and dirtier there.
Yeah, and as we were all talking about, remember that one, I forget if it was a Thursday night or a Friday night, where we were essentially all saying goodbye on Twitter. It was Elon Musk, I forget which firing it was, which mass firing, but there was a mass firing. And everyone's like, okay.
After several others.
Yeah, exactly. Is anyone running the store anymore? We're kind of screwed here. So I guess this is goodbye. Twitter only has days left. It's going to collapse because there's no one there minding the back end of the thing. But turns out there's been a major data breach at Twitter. Personal information of 5.4 million users was stolen by malicious hackers. Just if you decimate your security staff, if you decimate your IT staff the way Elon Musk has, it was only a matter of time before this happened. And the weird thing about this is I have no idea if I'm on that list. I have no idea if I'm one of the 5.4 million users whose data was stolen.
Well, you know, this is one area in which I am cynical, and that is I believe that the privacy as we once knew it is a myth. It no longer exists, and I almost feel I'm kind of at the point where I feel it's pointless to try to preserve it. There is, in this computer age, there is no privacy. There is no place to run, no place to hide for those of us who do anything online. So if you're online in any way, shape, or form, you've put yourself out there and you're taking that risk. I just don't believe, I think of the Constitution's right to privacy for American citizens. And I find it almost laughable now because, to me, it seems an impossible thing to enforce.
God, I've been seeing recommendations from experts saying, hey, you know what? Go through your DMs. Double check your DMs to see if you said anything nasty about another Twitter user. And because you know why? Because it's entirely possible that hackers are going to get a hold of your DM information, or even worse, Elon Musk is going to get his hands on your DM archive and then maybe use that against you. It's his website now. He can do that if he wants to. He can go into your DMs and say, hey, you know what? That Bob Seska was bad-mouthing Buzz Burbank in that DM thread that day. You know what? I'm gonna send that to Buzz Burbank just to screw over Bob. That's just an example. I'm not busting on you in my DMs, just to be clear about that.
No, nor the other way around.
Right, right. But, I mean, that's the sort of thing that can happen because it used to be, and this is the biggest, I think, change in the entire Twitter scenario. It used to be that Twitter was a thing run by an anonymous group of people.
Right.
Where there were panels and committees, and they decided things as to which direction to go and how to do it. And so it was diffused among a whole number of people. With Elon Musk being the sole owner, no shareholders, very little staff. It's now his personal playground. So that makes it especially dangerous for private information that happens to be in your DMs or wherever. And so that's one of many things that's making us all feel off balance. Plus, I was comparing it. I was talking to Sherry Jacobus on her show yesterday. We recorded her show on Monday. And I mentioned to her that I think one of the reasons why we're so off balance with this Elon Musk takeover is because it's like someone bought our neighborhood. Because we all, I think, consider our cultivated followings on Twitter.
We now have a slumlord.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like that. It's kind of like a guy came in, bought your entire neighborhood, and decided, hey, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to change where all the roads are. I'm going to tell you, I don't like the way these roads are arranged in this neighborhood. I'm going to move this road over there, that road over here. I'm going to tear up all the old roads. I'm going to put in new roads, and I'm going to put them in randomly. And by the way, I'm going to not be clear in terms of what my plans are, where I'm going with this, where the new roads are going to be. I may announce one thing one day and then change the entire plan for the roads the next day. Doesn't matter. You're just going to have to figure it out as you go. That's going to throw everyone way, way off balance. And that's exactly what's happened here.
Yeah, and I keep thinking, well, you know, they'll get the message, Musk and others will get the message that people don't like them because of the things that they do. When you get right down to it, Trump doesn't have a following of a majority of Americans. Not at all. No. They're faithful, they're loyal, and the same can be said for Musk and Nick Fuentes. But what Musk and Fuentes and Trump all have in common is, really, they don't care what people think of them.
I just noticed here, Kevin McCarthy is talking outside the White House right now.
Oh, is he?
And this clip from Aaron Rupar, the poll quote is Kevin McCarthy saying, I think they should stop picking on Elon Musk.
Uh-huh. Of course.
So there you go. That's it. I mean, I think it's
the same little Nazi club.
Exactly. And this is all part of the point. We're going to take over Twitter and we're going to turn it into a utopia for red hats and racists and monsters. This is going to be your new Twitter, ladies and gentlemen. And it's working out quite well for the people who want that to happen. And so now you have the Republican leader in the House of Representatives defending Elon Musk.
Endorsing it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Good God. But you know what? At the same time, he's going to lose all of his advertisers. Already major advertisers like Dyson, Mazda, Forbes, PBS Kids, they've suspended their marketing campaigns or removed their ads from parts of Twitter because of their promotions appearing alongside tweets soliciting child pornography.
Right.
There's your brand new Twitter. And, you know, he's also...
He's a slumlord. He's turned it into a slum.
Yes.
And a lot of advertisers, and you and I, and I know others, have taken up the practice of blocking all or nearly all advertisers on there.
Yeah.
If I see a little guy or somebody, you know, I let that go. But certain, especially big corporations, whether it's Comcast or whoever, I've just started blocking them because I want them to know that their ad dollars are being wasted.
And that's the big contradiction that I mentioned at the top of the show. I don't understand what he's really doing now when it comes to advertising, because all at once he's making it undesirable for any corporation mm-hmm. to want to spend money on Twitter. It's just one of those things, obviously. Corporate marketing departments are well known for being a little bit skittish in the first place. And now he's making it even worse for them, I guess. What that means is he's got to rely on just hectoring the advertisers. And we've seen little hints of this. Like, he's now gone to war against Tim Cook and Apple for deciding to pause their advertising. They were spending $50 million a quarter on Twitter. That's remarable. And now Apple's like, yeah, I don't think so. And so what he's doing in response to that is making it even less desirable for those advertisers. It's almost as if it's deliberate. It's almost as if it's organized. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, yeah, and maybe it is. I mean, I think we can draw a line from Kevin McCarthy, you just mentioned, and his comment, to Trump, to Musk, to Nick Fuentes, to, you know, Kanye West. They're all part of the same ugly web. You know, and I'll say this too, Trump is dumb in his own way, but is at the same time a bit of a marketing genius. You got to admit, he had a thing going that was successful for him. You can't be completely stupid to pull that off. So he has that kind of smarts, even though he's really ignorant of the world and of history and of government and everything else. Musk, on the other hand, is just a lucky idiot.
Yes, he is.
He lucked into money. He used that money to buy corporations like Tesla and now Twitter. But it's clear he doesn't know anything about anything. Musk is an absolute blithering idiot who just happened to have the dough.
Yeah, we talk about political tourists sometimes, you know, people who have no business being in politics, getting into politics. Your Donald Trumps and your Andrew Yangs and so on, Marianne Williamson and on down the line, Herschel Walker. Elon Musk is like a corporate tourist. He thinks he knows how to do this shit, and he really kind of doesn't. And the last thing I would want to be right now is an astronaut aboard a SpaceX rocket. I mean, there was a time when I thought, hey, you know what, SpaceX, they're doing some interesting shit. But seeing how Elon Musk runs Twitter, no fucking way would I would want to be at the nose end of one of those goddamn rockets, knowing that this guy's in charge.
At the same time, Elon Musk owns 25% of the working satellites that orbit this planet right now.
That's right.
25%.
By the way, I signed up to be on Post Friday morning, and I still have not been accepted onto Post yet. I'm not sure if that's...
And I'm hearing mixed things about them, too. You know, you're hearing... The one I really don't hear any criticism of, except for its complexity, is Mastodon. I've things have been said about Post, as well as some of the others that are out there. So far, I'm only on Mastodon. And I have to be honest, I haven't dedicated a lot of time to it, so I still don't really know how it works.
Yeah.
There's something about hashtags that you're supposed to do if you want to be read, and I haven't quite figured that out yet.
Yeah.
I'm just posting what I've always posted on Twitter and Facebook.
I think we did this last week, but I think it bears repeating. Just a bit of advice for those of you trying to sign up on Mastodon. Mm-hmm. If you're confused by how Mastodon works, I think this explanation will clear some things up.
Let me walk you through our Donnelly nut spacing and crack system rim riding grip configuration. Using a field of half-sea sprats and brass-fitted nickel slits, our bracketed caps and splay-flexed brace columns vent dampers to dampening hatch depths of 1/2 meter from the damper crown to the spur of plinth. How? Well,
how?
We bolster 12 husk nuts to each girdle jerry.
12 husk nuts.
The flex tandems press a task apparatus of 10 vertically composited patch hamplers.
Patch
hamplers. Then pin flam fastened pan traps at both maiden apexes of the gym joint.
Amazing. I hope you were taking notes, Buzz.
Amazing. Yeah. Amazing. I think I got it all. And really, that's all you have to do to understand and operate Mastodon to its fullest capability.
Okay, one last break. Back with more show right after this. Oops, oh, shit, what am I doing? God damn it. Oh, everything's going haywire.
It's out of control. It's out of control. It's got a mind of its own.
Back with more show right after these words.
Bob Seska plays more music.
Beginning of December and the snow's bringing me down. It's the worst season in forever in my small Nebraska town. And our lame electric company can't keep the power on. So no one tried to put up lights and the heat is long since gone. I'm so out of here. I'm spending Christmas in New Zealand where it's sunny.
That's a great idea. Want to head down to New Zealand with me, Buzz?
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, this is Christmas in New Zealand by the great Bitter Elegance and Jeffrey Wynn Prince. Nice. Yeah, this is from their brand new compilation album called Holiday Spirits. Proceeds go to benefit the SPCA.
Oh, cool.
So link in the description to support this song and this album. Again, the album is Holiday Spirits. You hear some music from the Bitter Elegance. The Hushed is in there, too. Yeah, some great music and going to support a wonderful, wonderful cause. We love the animals here on the show and anything that goes to help the animals is fine by us.
I make regular contributions to the SPCA and I urge other people to help our animal friends the same way. And, and I love this band. So that's a really good Christmas song. It can't be easy to write a new good Christmas song.
Yeah, Christmas in New Zealand. It was right on the tips of everyone's tongues. Yeah, the first place you want to go.
Why didn't we think of that?
Especially if you maybe don't have the most pleasant family life. You might want to get on a plane for, I think it's something like 36 hours to get from here to New Zealand. I don't know how long it takes to get to New Zealand.
It's a while.
Yeah, consider that an option. All right. Getting back to a few things here before we wrap up today's show. I noticed this the other day. Congressman Michael McCaul, who's a Republican from Texas, was on with Martha Raddatz on one of the Sunday shows.
Okay.
And he said that the Department of Homeland Security is complicit with the largest human trafficking of our lifetime. And Martha Raddatz's response was, okay, thanks so much for joining us. Yeah, big one of those. Not one of her best responses to unmitigated bullshit like that.
Well, I wasn't, or was that her way of cutting it off?
Maybe that's the case. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I have a fair amount of respect for her work.
Yeah, me too.
You know, so I when you recited that, I took it immediately to mean she'd heard enough, and it was time to get him off the air.
All right,
so I'd have to see it, you know, to pick up the vibe, to pick up the context. But
yeah,
that was my thought when I heard it.
Yeah, that might actually be the case. Good point. The DHS, Department of Homeland Security, stopped more human traffickers under Joe Biden in 2021 than under Trump in 2020. Womp womp. In fact, here's the statistic from the DHS website. ICE HSI's 35% increase in human trafficking arrests from 1,746 in fiscal year 2020 to 2,360 in fiscal year 2021. So that would be more in 2021 than there were in 2020. Now, something happened in between those 2 years. What was it? Oh, yes. Donald Trump no longer was president, and Joe Biden became president, presiding over an increase in stoppage of human trafficking at the border.
Impeaching the Homeland Security Secretary is high on the list of the Republican Congress that takes over the House 35 days from now. That's one of the many things they plan to do. They may very well try to impeach Joe Biden. There will certainly be a string of investigations. You know they're going to Benghazi the shit out of Hunter Biden. We know what's coming. This whole business of reading the Constitution, of focusing on Hunter Biden, this is their solution to inflation.
Yeah.
This is their solution to crime in America. The things that they cried and whined and pounded their fists about through the campaign, they're going to address this by reading the Constitution, which will be news to many of them, and going after Hunter Biden and members of the Trump Biden administration. They should go after Trump. They're going to end any investigation into the Trump administration. Mm-hmm. They're going to try to impeach Merrick Garland.
Yeah,
it was one reason it was good that he handed this off to a special counsel.
Yeah, exactly.
And I got to thinking about the last night. I think I was thinking we've had a special master, we've had a special counsel. You know, everybody's special these days.
Yes, I know. Everyone gets a participation trophy. A very, very special. It's a very, very special investigation.
We're special podcasters. And by the way, you pointed out before we started recording today, you and I met 30 years ago this month.
Yeah, it was 30 years ago, 1992. The craziest thing was I had never really been on the radio all that much prior to getting hired as an intern on the Don and Mike show. Right. And so I think I first cracked a microphone on the air. I mean, legitimately being broadcast, because I did a lot of pretend radio shows when I was a little kid.
Sure.
But we all did. The first legitimate radio show I ever did was probably October of 1992. And then by November, I had applied to be an intern on the Don and Mike show, had gone down to WJFK in the Washington, D.C. area, specifically Fairfax, Virginia, and met with Diana Sillman, who was the executive producer of the show at the time, and interviewed with her, and things went well. I was feeling good. I was feeling confident in that interview. I remember feeling good about the overall results of it. And in the course of being interviewed by Diana, she took me around for a tour at the radio station, and that's where I believe you and I shook hands for the very first time. Because I remember...
Was I a jerk? Did I wave you off with something like, writer on deadline?
No, absolutely. Absolutely not. Although, along those lines, that was the first time I was instructed not to make direct eye contact with Don and or Mike.
The hosts, yeah.
Yeah, the hosts of the Don and Mike show. Because making eye contact...
I wish someone had told me that.
I'm surprised that didn't happen. Given the micromanaging, I'm surprised you weren't instructed that. But I was told not to make direct eye contact because it would make Don and Mike uncomfortable.
Oh.
And I'm not sure why necessarily. I guess it's, I don't know. It's a typical thing. I think that was like a Larry Sanders show thing too. Like
yes,
you couldn't make direct eye contact with Larry Sanders because it made him oogie. Obviously, the upshot was a couple days later, I get a call and it's from Diana saying that I've been hired to be an intern. And that was just an immense boost for my confidence level in my career at that early stage.
You were a great intern for them, and somehow, and I'm not even sure how, you got passed off to me. But you were the first and probably only intern I ever had who seemed to be truly interested in what happened on the news side of things.
Yes, yeah.
And I was delighted to have an interested audience, so I was happy to share with you and teach you as much as I could, as much as I was grooming you, Bob.
That's exactly right.
To be a broadcaster.
And what happened was I started my internship in January. First of all, I had to figure out how to incorporate an internship with the Don and Mike show into my political science curriculum because I was a political science major, and I had to figure that out. And so that's where G. Gordon Liddy came in. I was like, oh, yeah, well, Liddy's on the same radio station, and that kind of connects to politics. And my political science advisor, Mr. Braisted, was like, okay. Okay, fine. And so I felt like I achieved something. And so I started my internship in January. And for that semester, I was technically Don and Mike's intern. But one of the things I started to do, in addition to, you know, getting their lunches and their super big gulps and all the rest of it, bringing all the carts and CDs into the air studio before the show, I started noodling around in the newsroom, getting the AP wire service copy, ripping that off, getting you used to use half pages of paper to type up your news scripts, and I would get those together and the audio things.
Yeah. And you did it well. You were one of the few, if only, people who had a knack for that, a true understanding of what needed to be done. So your work was always correct. It was always perfect for me.
Yeah.
You know, you did it the way I would do it, and that made it a well-oiled machine in there.
Well, and also, I knew that the behind-the-scenes stuff on the show would eventually make it onto the air. And the last thing I wanted to do was to make an ass of myself on the show.
Of course.
By doing something wrong. And it didn't take long before I actually did make an ass of myself on the air. But that's a whole separate story. I could talk about that in the shadow docket, maybe.
That's less on you and more on the circumstance, I think.
Yes, yes. It was not an easy show to intern for.
it's an anniversary worth noting. I thought the audience would be interested to know that. I certainly am, you know, I have mixed feelings about it. I can't believe it's been that long. Yeah, but I'm also glad that we've known each other for that amount of time.
Well, so once that internship ended, at the end of the semester, I decided to stay on and do a second internship with you, and that's where I became exclusively your intern through that entire summer.
Right.
And that was quite a relief, because I feel as though my first semester as an intern was not the greatest. And so the second half of that whole experience through the summer, I feel like I redeemed myself, not only getting to work with you and spending time in the newsroom, but also some other things that happen.
I may be glorifying it, but the way my memory serves is that all of our discussions were written by Aaron Sorkin.
That's kind of the case. But I'm going to tell some more stories. We'll talk about this a little bit on the Shadow Dog and on our Patreon page, BobSuskaShow.com. Plus, my annual tip for buying artificial Christmas trees.
That may be a debate.
We'll talk about that. Yeah, I mean, there is no hard and fast rule. You can do whatever the hell you want. This is just some advice if you choose to accept it. It's not one of those things where I'm planting a flag on any one way to do this.
I'm eager to hear it. And you can only hear it if you are a Patreon subscriber.
$5 a month. That's all it takes. Go right now to BobSuskaShow.com. Find the level that says... What do we call this? Oh, yeah, Shadow Docket. It's the Shadow Docket level. $5 a month, sign up. You get automatically charged at the end of the month. It's easy peasy. And if you're feeling saucy, you can sign up for more. You can sign up for $10 a month. Not only will you get the Shadow Docket, but then you'll also get the Friday after party with me and Kimberly Johnson. Lots of fun and insane conversations on the after party. Shit that we could never get away with talking about on the free show. And if you're feeling especially generous, $15 a month gets you the Shadow Docket, gets you the after party. Plus, we take out all the commercials from the free show and present it all to you clean and free and clear of all commercials in one big chunk. We call that the ultimate edition of the podcast. So BobSuskaShow.com is where you sign up for all of that. Plus, let's see what else here. We may talk about, you know what? I don't know what the hell we're going to talk about, because
it'll be good.
I get the sense that the Christmas tree thing and some more internship stories might dominate the Shadow Docket. Plus, we're way long on the free portion of the show. So I don't know.
I love that.
Maybe some other shit in there, too.
Probably.
If we decide to get to it. But see, that's the thing about the Shadow Docket. Sometimes we get to everything. Sometimes we don't. You never know. I'm not sure if that's good or bad. I think it's probably ultimately bad. It's like a bait and switch, but who knows?
It's good. It's good.
So I had a great great Thanksgiving break. Thanks for bearing with us as we took a couple of days off from the show last week. And we'll have a two-week break coming up over the holidays. Uh-huh. But those are rare. I think those are few and far between. And so you can count on us to be there and to earn your support by remaining consistent with shows every Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So, there you go. But, you know, you need a chance to refuel, right?
Exactly.
I need to refuel the outrage tanks, as I like to say.
Easy to do.
All right, big Shadow Docket coming up next. Stay tuned. Stick around. We'll see you over there, folks. BobSuskaShow.com. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So this is Christmas. What have you done? Another year over.
I'm spending Christmas in.